Collins.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America is getting older. 13% of the population is 65 or over, and that number will continue to grow for the foreseeable future. For that reason, cities around the country are turning their attention to serving an aging population by making themselves age-friendly. Advocates say it's not only the right thing to do, but it is an economic necessity and one that will ensure the future health of all generations. Some cities are ahead of others in this movement, and we wondered how Charlotte, which is known for its youth appeal, is doing. So we'll spend the hour exploring that with a former Charlottean now living in Portland, Oregon, a city that we are often compared to for whatever reason. Jeanette Liardi is a writer and civic engagement committee member with Age Friendly Portland. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
Not only am I welcoming you back to Charlotte, but you've been on this program before.
That's
when
right.
You lived here. Michael Olender is Associate Director of AARP of North Carolina Charlotte. Far too young to be in that job, but welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
He's all of 26, I think. Bill McCoy is retired director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Linda Miller is aging program director, not that she's aging, but she's the aging program director of the Centralina Area Agency on Aging. A lot of AGs in there. Thank you for joining us,
Good
too.
Good morning.
Jeanette, let me start with you because you worked here for the Charlotte Observer. You lived here for a long time and have since moved to Portland, Oregon, a city, as I said, to which we are often compared. Just off the topic, is it a fair comparison? Because we hear about Portland and Charlotte all the time.
I'm surprised to hear that. I didn't know that these comparisons were going on. I don't know how fair the comparison is because I don't know on what subjects you are being compared.
Transportation, lifestyle, you name it, little things that are happening in the arts, et cetera.
Well, it's a fair comparison if the comparison is to stimulate change in Charlotte. It's a fair comparison.
You're not painting a pretty picture.
Well, I mean, Charlotte always has had wonderful things in it, and especially the arts. It's a very booming arts center, in my opinion. When it comes to transportation, though, Portland, we're about to open up, and maybe we have already, our fifth light rail line. We have five light rail lines that connect the city. So we...
Is there pushback? Because it costs a lot of money to do that.
There has been pushback, but when you balance out the amazing economic boost that it creates for the city and accessibility of people to get around, there isn't that much pushback. They seem to find the funding.
Transportation is actually a part of this aging conversation, so I want to spend just a second, and we'll come back to it later on in the program from a different point of view. But in terms of money, where does the money come from to open these five lines?
Well, we have something in Portland called Metro. Metro is an association that that works with the county and the city, and the funding comes from the people. It's taxing. You know, we are taxed. We pay a transportation tax every year in Portland.
They don't complain about it?
They do, but we have a large ridership, so they don't complain as much because I think about 30% of the population rides Metro every day.
Because they can, or because they actually wanted to, and that's why they built the five lines.
Because they can and want to, they don't have to bring their cars into the center of the city. It's very convenient. It's very clean. Very reliable. So, and I'm originally a New Yorker, so for me to go from New York to Charlotte to Portland, I feel like in some ways I'm sort of back in New York.
Okay. You are also a member of the Civic Engagement Committee with Age Friendly Portland.
Right.
Let's talk about both of those things. What is the Civic Engagement Committee and what is Age Friendly Portland?
Well, let me kind of back up and talk about what Age Friendly Portland is first, because the Civic Engagement Committee is one of three subtopics that we are tackling under Age Friendly Portland. Age Friendly Portland started actually back in 2006 when the World Health Organization of the United Nations approached 33 cities in 22 countries with this research project called Global Age-Friendly Cities. And they asked these cities to give them input as to the needs and the desires of the city to make their communities age-friendly. Portland was the only U.S. city to take part in this original research project. Then in 2010, the age-friendly cities movement kicked off, and Portland and New York City were the only two cities among the original nine cities to become part of this global network. The age-friendly Portland movement came out of that because of all the research that was done by Portland State University's Institute on Aging. They did the gathering of information for the World Health Organization for Portland. And all this data then inspired Portland to come up with its own age-friendly plan, action plan. And that's what we're working with now. And so under this action plan, we have 10 subtopics that we're concentrating on based on the original 8 from the World Health Organization. We divided up them up slightly differently. But one of them is civic engagement. The other is housing. And the third that we chose to work on first is employment and the economy. In the coming year, we're adding 2 more, transportation and health services.
Now, Bill, I said in the beginning of the program that 16% of the population right now is 65 or over, and I think by 2013 it'll be 20%, which doesn't sound like an enormous increase in that amount of time. But what about this region? Are the demographics similar to that? Because those are national statistics.
They are similar, but less. This is a younger population than you will find nationally. In 2015, 10% of the population in Mecklenburg County are 65 plus. The prediction is by 2030, that number will be 15%. And that is lower than you find nationally or even in this other counties in this region.
Does that make having this conversation at a policymaker level more difficult because there's so many younger people here?
It does make it more difficult. There are more younger people, but this balance is changing. There will soon be more older people than there are younger people, or that is people under 18. So, and that's occurring again all across the nation as well as here. So this conversation, which is in its infancy here probably, is going to grow as this demographic switches.
We have a fellow here from AARP, Michael Olender, who does not have to lick the envelopes on all of the invitations to join that are mass mailed on a daily basis. But I'll bet you that your membership is growing. Is this one of their concerns, living in an age-friendly place?
Well, it's a huge concern because of the fact that one of the trends that we're seeing nationally, and this is true, I think, at every major city across the country, is that people are concerned about budgets. You know, we saw in the last 5 years a lot of pressure being put on decision makers and elected officials to manage their budgets and to look at programs that previously would never be looked at, like Social Security, you know, used to be considered to be the third rail of politics. Couldn't talk about touching it. Mm-hmm. Now you've got decision makers, you know, walking on it like a balancing beam, talking about how they're going to cut it. And that's both sides of the aisle. We heard that from the White House in the last couple of years, a couple of times. I think the way that transcends down to the local level is you have an issue where you've got a number of people who are trying to make the case that we don't have money to make these types of investments. At the same time, the need has never been greater for cities to prepare for these demographic challenges. And that's one thing I think that a lot of people don't get is they typically talk about the baby boom and so forth as sort of this Washington problem that needs to be resolved. You know, how do we pay for Medicare, Social Security, long-term care, those types of things? The fact is, though, is that people live in communities before they live in countries, right? How are cities going to prepare is really the fundamental question. And that's why age-friendly is such an important issue, because now is the time that we need to act. We can't be acting in 2030 when we have all of this demand for services and no capacity to be able to deliver it effectively.
And I guess now's the time to start thinking about it. You started thinking about it, Jeanette, because you had elderly parents who suddenly, you never thought about it before, but suddenly you realized as you were trying to care for them that services were difficult to come by or difficult to find even if they existed. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely right. And the ironic thing is I worked at the Observer at the time. I knew some things existed, but I didn't know all of the things that existed. And I was in my, I would say, in my 50s, late 40s and early 50s at the time that I was a caregiver. And it just amazed me once after I took care of my parents and they both passed away, I switched careers. My encore career became gerontology, and I got a graduate certificate from UNC Charlotte. And it was in my classes where I first learned about all of the services, many of the services I could have used as a caregiver. Mm-hmm. So when we would have guest speakers come to our classes, my hand would always go up and say, Why don't we know about you? Why don't we know about the National Family Caregiver Support Program and things like that?
One of the things that you discovered as you started working for and with your parents was that older people, at least in this community, had been, the feeling was that they had been marginalized. Linda Miller is the Aging Program Director for the Central Carolina Aging Area Agency on Aging. Is that the case, do you think, in 2015? Are older people marginalized in our society still, our community?
You know, I'm just not so sure that that's the case. I think what Jeanette's experience is more the typical experience, in that until it's right in your face and you need service, you haven't done any research before. Who wants to? Mm-hmm. You know, and then when you need it, you do realize there's some things out there for you. So I don't know if that's being marginalized.
Well, we do kind of shunt people off.
Well,
I mean, it used to be generations would live in the same family, grandma and the mom and dad and the kids would all be in the same house. And now when people get older, although they want to age in place, they get shunted off to assisted care facilities and nursing homes and places like that.
No, yeah, and I think you're right, Mike. I think when you say it that way, that's true. I think you don't see those multi-generational families as much anymore, particularly in Charlotte, where you do have a lot of young people who have been transferred here to jobs. But, you know, when we were talking before, I wrote a note to say, you know, what we have to remember, though, is that influx of mm-hmm. out-of-state retirees that come here, though, to be with children. They may not be multi-generational homes, but they look for retirement homes. They look for housing. I think that's the wild card here in Charlotte.
Yeah.
We may have a younger population, but we're finding out that we're, what, Bill? We're one of the top at least five retiree states in the nation.
Right. The other thing that I think is that older people want to age in place, and that means sometimes in their house, but more often in their community. What they don't want to be is institutionalized, and it's because of that issue that you're talking about. That's
yeah.
when you begin to feel marginalized, is that when you're pulled out of your place in society and put in an institution, and many of these institutions are very good, but it's that move
yeah.
that is the thing that really shakes people up.
Well, the baby boomers have had profound influence on everything in this country since 1950, probably. Everything they've touched has been baby boomer centric. They have run the world. As the baby boomers go into their elderly years, won't they run that side of the equation as well? Won't they? You were with AARP. That's who you're talking
yeah.
to. Aren't they running things? Aren't they changing things? Aren't they demanding change? Aren't they being listened to?
I think that one thing that's really interesting about this field, by that I mean the field of quote-unquote aging, is that the boomer generation is unlike any other 65-plus generation that we've had before. This is a generation that doesn't play by the old rules. This is a generation that very much wants to be engaged, that wants to, though many people have to continue working because of the economy, many people who choose to continue working, people who decide to start businesses, even though when typically, you know, maybe at that age their parents would have retired, they want to be active. They don't want to be just limited to, say, you know, activities at their local senior center. They want to be out doing things,
right.
showing that they still have it. And I think that's one of the one way that we're going to get through this challenge is those voices coming up and speaking as decision makers and planners are considering changes to help make the city meet these demographic challenges.
I want to talk
about how do we do that?
What may or may not be a kind of tug of war between the boomers and the millennials, and how that affects people in a city like Charlotte, where there are a lot of millennials and where we are working hard to attract more of them. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. Blood donations historically decrease in the summer. Local businesses, churches, and organizations can host community blood drives to support local patients. CBCC.us. Well, the recent shootings at a Charleston church that appeared to have been racially motivated, along with a series of African Americans who have lost their lives at the hands of police, have reopened this country's on-again, off-again conversation on race. Have we ever acknowledged the true nature of the racial tension that seems to grip this country? Can we hold an open, honest conversation on the topic? Is the South's relationship with race really any different from that of the rest of the country? We take a crack at that conversation tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, this fall, 5 million public school students in Texas will use textbooks that critics say misrepresent the Civil War and the nation's history of racial segregation. The battle over how the Civil War is taught in public schools.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about becoming an age-friendly city as the population of America and of Charlotte begins to age a little bit with Jeanette Liardi. She's a writer, a former reporter for the Charlotte Observer, who now works in Portland, Oregon, as a member of the Civic Engagement Committee of Age-Friendly Portland. Bill McCoy is with us, retired director of UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. They do statistics and studies on all things Charlotte. Michael Olender is associate state director of the AARP of North Carolina Charlotte, and Linda Miller is aging program director of the Central Atlanta Area Aging Central Atlanta Area Agency on Aging. Have you thought about changing your name just for the program here?
You could use AAA if you'd like.
Okay, thank you very much. That would be the American Automobile Association. This is a city that's working hard, Linda, to attract millennials. We want more of these folks to come in here because of their entrepreneurial spirit and because of their youth and vitality and because they change the complexions of places that they work. And we want to be one of those places. If that's true, and we are successful, we are being successful at attracting those folks, what's it going to be like as they have youthful-oriented points of view and we have all these boomers retiring and needing services and wanting this place to be an age-friendly city? Can the two peacefully coexist?
Well, you know, I think the panel would agree that absolutely. Not a doubt in my mind, because most of the time there's that assumption potentially that people think that they do want very different things, but a lot of the times they really don't. They want millennials and seniors and anybody aging, whether you're as young as Michael or as old as the rest of us, we want walkable cities. People don't want to use their cars as much. They want transportation. So do seniors. Year after year, when we do needs assessments, the top two every year in the top two undoubtedly is transportation. They want easy, quick, reliable, inexpensive, easy to negotiate transportation. So do your millennials. They want walkability in a city and around their smaller communities. They want parks. They want and areas for parks and recreation and to be out and to be active, like Michael said. They want just accessibility to everything, and they want to have homes that are also very easy to negotiate, aren't as big as what maybe the boomers used to want with those big, giant homes. We all scaling down.
The boomers are downsizing. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've talked a lot about that with regard to urban development, et cetera, on this program, Bill. And one of the things that does come through is exactly what Linda's been talking about, that the people who want to live downtown, for instance, who want to live in these condominiums that have been going up like wildfire, are the millennials who like the urban environment, and baby boomers who are tired of the 4,000 square foot acre and a half yard in the suburbs and just want to live where they can walk to restaurants and entertainment and shopping experiences.
They've given up on the big house.
Yeah.
And the boomers are looking for those kinds of places, but the millennials are too. And if you think about the millennials, most of them grew up in a large house somewhere or the other in the suburban area, mowing yards, and they don't want to do that, and the boomers don't want to do that, so they're moving downtown.
But, you know, despite all the optimism that we're hearing around this table today, Bill, you have said that the issues that older Americans and older Charlottesians face are the same issues that we've been talking about for decades, and nothing changes. Tell me about that.
I probably did the first study with the Council on Aging in the 1970s when a survey was done. Another one was done in the 80s. We've just recently done one that did not include a survey, but did an analysis. And as Linda says, and all of us say, transportation is always top of that list. People don't want to be socially isolated or isolated in any way. And this is the first generation in many respects that have been totally dependent on the automobile their entire life. They never had anything else. And maybe if you were born in New York, you had something else. But for most people, they had a car.
Well, the whole country was designed for cars.
And so if you're all of a sudden faced, and many of us are facing that, I can't have a car anymore. I can't drive a car. What am I going to do now? And the vacuum that's there is huge in this community. It's much better in Portland. It's much better in New York, Chicago. But in this community, there's a huge vacuum.
Is it? I don't know what Portland's like. I've never been there. But is it much better in Portland if you live in the downtown core or near the downtown core? Surely there must be outlying suburbs in Portland that are not served necessarily very well by transportation.
Actually, it's served very well by transportation, not just the light rail system. We have many, many bus lines. We have a streetcar that goes from two major it's still considered the central part of the city, but geographically kind of far, a streetcar that serves those two areas and comes right to the downtown area. I think I can explain the inertia, and the inertia comes from a very deep-seated, and this is the main point I'd like to make today, very deep-seated fear of aging and a sense of aging, a definition of aging as decline, that as you get older, you just slow down, you start losing your hearing, you lose your eyesight, you know, you start to, quote, fall apart. And what we need to do to get all of these initiatives going and stimulating is to totally rethink what we think about aging, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of misperceptions about what it means to get older. What we're trying to do in Portland and elsewhere, all of this age-friendly cities movement, is to look at aging as an asset. Yes, there are some declines. We're not in denial. Yes, I'm wearing reading glasses now and, you know, lost a little bit of my hearing. But the flip side is that there's such human capital that's going wasted in older adults. We're not using them back in our society to contribute. When you talk about older adults and millennials, they get along very well together, actually, because they're looking for the same things: balance in life. They want to be active in a live culture. And so this is where a lot of baby boomers can help millennials integrate into the society.
Well, as I was reading all about this yesterday, it was clear that a lot of things that Charlotte is missing that would be needed to become age-friendly, which we'll talk about, are going to be expensive. It's going to cost some money to do some of these things. But there is evidently, in cities that have already accomplished this, an economic benefit to having to being age-friendly, to having this mix of older and younger people. What is that benefit? Is it monetary? Is it intellectual? What is it?
It's everything.
Yeah. I think it's a number of things. I mean, the economic one is, you know, the number one purchaser of consumer tablet devices are people who are 50 plus. You have much more typically, you know, your older person has more disposable income, especially once the kids are out of the house, and, you know, those types of expenses are a thing of the past. You have an incredible amount of social capital in terms of work experience. The value that experienced workers bring to employers is something that needs to be talked about a lot more. You have a lot of people now, especially millennials and the generation to come, people who are growing up on Facebook and maybe don't necessarily have the types of skills that work well in a workplace when you have to work with people and get along and that type of thing. That type of experience is something that's of real benefit to employers. You have the experience that came with working, aside from those soft skills, where boomers who are still looking for a way to be able to give back and to still be relevant, to be able to share their expertise by volunteering and doing all sorts of different things. We have a wonderful pool, AARP, a volunteer network here, of dozens of people who give back, who have incredible amount of skills that I can only hope to have by the time I'm in my 60s. And we see the benefit of that here every day. We've got literally at least two or three AARP workshops going on in the city of Charlotte every single week.
You've been nodding vigorously during that, Linda.
I just wanted to make sure he got the volunteerism in, and I knew he was working towards that because, I mean, I think there is research that has shown that Charlotte is one of the biggest volunteer cities in the entire country, that we provide more hours than almost any city in the United States, and I don't think you can undersell that as economically – And it also gives a lot of people, we call them encore careers. Yeah, I quit my career and where I worked for 25 years at the bank, but now I could do what I, what I've always wanted to do, right, or loved. And I start my encore careers because I might only be 60 when I retire. And there's a lot of terrific things that I can offer, right, the community. So it's a combination of a lot of different things.
Bill McCoy.
I don't think we have to go to Portland to find this, though.
Right.
Asheville and Buncombe County are an excellent example in this state where they have built a whole economic development profile on older adults and millennials.
Why have they done that?
They did that because they didn't know what else to do. They thought it was a good way to grow, and they thought becoming a retirement place for people that were in Atlanta was a good idea, and that happened. And these people brought industry with them. They started new organizations. More startups occur with older adults than anybody else. So this is a economic thing that communities can do. I think, well, Wilmington does it. I think Chapel Hill's doing it.
We used to talk about North Carolina being a halfback place. Northerners, yeah, go to Florida after they retire and realize it's too darn hot and too darn boring, and then they move halfway back where it doesn't snow a lot, but it's also kind of temperate, and North Carolina is that place on the map. Given that knowledge, and we've been talking about that for years, why haven't we done more, both in Charlotte and around the state, to encourage that kind of intellectual and personal capital to come here and serve them properly so that they can come here and be happy here?
I think we do some. I think the state has makes an effort to do that. And then individual communities certainly have. And in the mountains, it's not just Asheville, but it's Highlands, it's Boone, it's mm-hmm. Blowing Rock.
These are all tourist attractions,
yeah,
for those of us who live here.
Right. But it's home for some people
who
are halfbacks.
Well, the Urban Institute conducted a community needs assessment on the aging population, I think it was last December. What did you discover? What are those needs? How ready are we as a community to provide the services required?
We had a graduate student from UNC Chapel Hill that did this study. Okay. She was doing her clinical work, field work in Charlotte, and we housed her at the Urban Institute and advised that. But as you mentioned, the findings are not different from the ones that have been there in the past. Transportation is a primary one of them. Linda has mentioned that there's an organization that's been trying to do volunteer transportation services that has a very difficult time getting matching money for grants to keep it going. It's a struggle, but it's not. There's also appropriate housing, a need for appropriate housing. There are caregiving, as we've mentioned, is a huge, huge need.
This may sound like a silly question, but what impact do you think Uber will have on aging population, because it's cheaper than taxis and more easier. The access is easier than getting a bus.
Well, Bill may know more, but I can't say for sure right now. That may be, but I think a lot of the challenge is serving some of our more rural. We service a 9-county area,
okay,
in with Central Ina, so we do see some really rural areas where I'm not sure how much Uber you're going to see in some of those. So you're going to have some innovative transportation alternatives, because there are people, quite a few, which people don't realize, that fall through the cracks of your more traditional transportation.
What are other cities that have reasonably sized rural areas attached to them doing for transportation? Because it's probably not economically viable to run a bus line out into a rural area where the ridership will be very small but needed.
Right. And there are funds through DOT and through other federal and state grants that allow people to use what you might see going around Charlotte, as we call, through CATS or Access, where there's a van maybe mm-hmm. taking five mm-hmm. or six people to multiple transportation, or taking them to a congregate dining site where they go through a hot meal. But there are a lot of people that fall through the cracks or want to cross state lines.
Right.
And those are the ones, and that's where we need, and this is where volunteerism comes in, which is what Mike said. You know, our hope was to start that we can help those people, and that's everybody wins on a new program designed like that.
Jeanette.
One of the things that boomers are starting around the country, and I guess we can all speak to this, is something called the Village Movement, in which neighborhoods, geographic areas, kind of band together and form a membership and a nonprofit, and for a minimal fee and sliding scale and scholarships for people who can't afford this, they literally become your entire support system. So you have volunteers who will take you to the doctor, who will change your, you know, fix your roof, do various things, because you're all members of this group. And so I think that's, a lot of it is it takes a village. And I think that's where we're going as baby boomers in getting a lot of these services met. And we have to keep in mind that there are a lot of older adults that can't afford something like Uber,
yeah,
that have very low income.
Michael Olander, your AARP gives Charlotte a 52 out of 100 in terms of how livable it is. I'm not sure how good or how bad 52 out of 100 is. Doesn't sound so great. But worse, you say that Charlotte has its work cut out for itself when it comes to preparing for an aging population. Why do you say that?
Well, I say that just in, you know, with respect to you know, when you compare it to places like Portland or other cities who have made a greater advancements in terms of their transportation systems, affordable housing. For example, there are a number of cities all across the country who have implemented universal design principles in their building codes. So when homes are built, and this isn't, in most cases, not a mandate, but it's at least presented as an option, homes are built with what are called inclusive design or universal design principles. So instead of a narrow doorway getting into the bathroom, you've got a 34 or 36-inch doorway, making sure there's a no-step entrance into the home, at least one room at the ground floor that could be used as a bedroom. So this way, if a person loses their mobility due to an accident, due to something they weren't expecting, that they're able to still remain in the home. With respect to Charlotte, that 52 comes from the AARP, Public Policy Institute's new livability index.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a really helpful tool, I think, because the 52 number is a little deceiving because it looks at the whole city of Charlotte, right? But you can actually go into that tool, enter a specific address, and it will pull up, you know, ratings of a number of different areas, domains. So you could see, for example, where a particular neighborhood ranks in transportation in terms of the amount of congestion to get to your average job in Charlotte. By the way, we are above the national average when it comes to that. What's your access like, not just to food, but to healthy foods? What's your access like to exercise options? What is the diversity? What is the economic opportunity for people who are 65 plus? What's your access to housing that has universal design features?
Mm-hmm.
So these types of tools, or this type of tool, the livability index, I think when you look at it at the city, when you look at that number 52 doesn't seem too impressive. But when you look at certain neighborhoods, you can see where the ball is being advanced a little bit further than others, and you see we're doing pretty well. One of the things we are doing really well, far above the national average, is in terms of access to health care, in particular hospitals that have low readmission rates for preventable conditions.
In other words, they cure you.
They take care of you, and you're not going back, and you're not going back within 30 or 90 days for the same condition.
Michael Olander is with the AARP. Bill McCoy is with the Urban Institute here in Charlotte. Linda Miller is with the Central Atlanta Area Agency on Aging, and Jeanette Liardi is a committee member of the Age Friendly Portland organization. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, and jewelry for all occasions. Donald Hack Diamonds, Morrowcroft Shopping Village at Colony and Sharon Roads, and at DonaldHack.com. This fall, 5 million public school students in Texas will use textbooks that critics say misrepresent the Civil War and the nation's history of racial segregation. The battle over how the Civil War is taught in public school, where Texas and California control a lot of what the rest of the country sees in terms of textbooks because of their sheer size. That's the topic of the conversation at 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join ours, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
There are a lot of economic repercussions, not just for Greece, but for the Eurozone, if Greece were to stand out.
It's your community.
we help you understand it.
You're going to have every district in the state scrambling to hire more teachers at the very last minute. To say that's a challenge would be an understatement.
Cabarrus County Schools would have to hire...
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about becoming age-friendly and what that requires and how Charlotte ranks. We'll get to a lot of statistics. We have a lot to talk about here, but we also asked a social media question. We wanted to hear from you about, is Charlotte age-friendly? Why or why not? We did that on Facebook and Twitter, obviously, and we've gotten some responses. Michelle writes, I see lots of assisted living facilities, including some being built now. Can't seniors just move to these retirement homes? I see your head's exploding.
Yes, my head is exploding. The one thing, many assisted living centers and nursing homes can be good, very good places if they give what we call person-centered care. In other words,
and some people need that.
Absolutely.
Not to minimize that. They actually need it.
But by person-centered care, it means that you address the needs of the person as an individual so that it's not something like the medical model where one size fits all, which winds up to be one size fits none. So, but as far as baby boomers are concerned, if we can avoid it, we really don't want to go to assisted living. We'd like to have those services where we live. So, and it's not that easy. Not many people can afford assisted living. That's very expensive.
Nope. Assisted living, an average year in an assisted living is about $37,000 to about $40,000 a year. In North Carolina, almost all of the assisted livings in Mecklenburg County are private pay, which means you don't get any assistance. And that's what a lot of people really believe until it hits them in the face. Oh, I won't have any problem when my parents need a nursing home. The state will pay for it, or so-and-so will pay. They think that there's something out there that helps them pay for it. My Medicare will pay for it. That's not the case, and that's a big lesson to learn.
Is it cheaper to age in place? Is it less expensive to maintain your own home and be able to live in your own home with people coming in to assist you? Is it?
Yes.
It is.
Are those services available in this area on a needed basis and enough to serve the need? There's the way to say it.
Well, that would be two-part. I'm sorry, Bill. Real quick, only because is that we want people to access what they might have set aside for that rainy day if you do have those resources financially. So could you get those services immediately if you have that money? Absolutely. If you do not have the money and have to access, it just depends, Mike. You might have to wait, but you might have services accessible right away. That's a tricky question.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's, if you have resources, you can get anything.
Yeah,
it's in this community if you want it.
Absolutely,
and you can pay for it.
Right.
So, and if you know somebody's seeing a lot of assisted build housing going up, or assisted care institutions are continuing care institutions, those are occurring in limited parts of this city, primarily the South, and to some degree in the North, where
both
people
economically
can afford
strong
to,
areas,
to go to them. You go to the other parts and you don't see that.
If you believe what you read about baby boomers, they have been notoriously negligent in saving for retirement. That would also, I would think, mean that they haven't provided for themselves in terms of long-term care. You're 40.
Yes.
Have you? You work for the AARP. You read about this stuff all the time. You have a long care term policy?
No, I don't. But this is
shameful behavior.
In my defense, I'm 40, and this is the year when I'm starting to do all sorts of things I didn't have to think about before. So I'm only a few months into this decade. But no, you're absolutely right. That is one thing that boomers need to work on, and it's one of the things that groups like AARP try and do. When we release reports, for example, one earlier this year, again showing that overwhelmingly people are not saving like they need to be, and I think there's a lot of denial, a lot of misunderstanding, as Linda mentioned before, people thinking that Medicare is going to take care of all this stuff. Oh, well, just if I need a nursing home, I need assisted living, Medicare will take care of it, and they don't. And then they find out how expensive it is, and it's
so
really
what happens to those people who have not provided a safety net for themselves? They end up needing a facility like that. They can't afford it, and Medicare is not going to pay for it. What happens to them?
Medicaid. Then you have to expend all of your resources.
and then you become Medicaid eligible.
So you have to bankrupt yourself.
Exactly.
Okay.
Just about.
Catherine wonders, how many seniors are there in Mecklenburg County, and how many can we expect in the future, and how big is this problem? Numbers, not percentages, please.
Mecklenburg County has 1 million people in it, so 10% of us are 65 plus.
That's 100,000 people.
When we're at 15% in 2030, we're going to be a much bigger place altogether. So that's going to be 150,000, 160,000 probably. So and that's a good question, because if we talk about 10%, that doesn't sound like much.
Right.
But when you talk about 100,000 people, that sounds like a lot.
That's a city.
Right. It's a big city, a good-sized city. So there are a lot of people who are 65 plus in this in Mecklenburg County.
Okay.
In defense of some baby boomers, in terms of not saving enough, some of us who were caregivers lost a lot of money as caregivers. We lost time, we lost income, we lost some of our health. And then with the 2008, crash, I call it a crash, a lot of us lost a lot of our retirement savings. So.
Yep. Martin writes, one of the first tasks to focus on is educating all at the end of their working career on how to make the transition into retirement. By doing so, we'll have an aging population better prepared to deal with aging. Virtually no one has a plan, just vague notions. Do you find that to be true?
Mostly.
The second part, I would say it needs to be much earlier than that.
Yeah.
I think that especially if we're going to be with the earlier discussion we had, Mike, about how do we, having millennials and boomers on the same page, we need to be having the discussions about where do you see yourself living and doing when you're, in your 60s or 70s. People need to be start thinking the earlier, just like, I've got some friends who started putting away money into their 401k when they turned 21 and they're still doing it. The earlier, the better, and it's the same thing when it comes to thinking about how you want to live out your golden years, so to speak.
If the AARP starts sending out literature to people who are about 50 years old in preparation for thinking about retirement, is that early enough? Should you be sending things out to 30-year-olds?
Those discussions happen. Actually, you actually don't have to be 50 to join AARP. You can be 18 and join. Our marketing is limited to 50 plus, just because
you can't market
those big red letters are very big, but we're not an endless
money. I think something you can do that Michael's right. Individually, you can do that, but I think that Jeanette's a citizen, a member of this citizens group in Oregon. I think be at the table when these towns and counties do planning, because most have written grants to do this individualized planning. Davidson, Mooresville's doing a great job. Charlotte, be at that table as a concerned citizen to see how your community is going to handle aging, so that when you're ready and you're there, you're better prepared and you've been part of that process.
And
they have to show community involvement.
And another thing, when you talk about marginalizing older adults, a lot of times older adults are not invited to the table. So we baby boomers, we're going to assert ourselves. We're going to invite ourselves.
I'm going to paraphrase this, but as a guest said yesterday, if you are not at the table, you are probably being consumed. Tracy writes, I'm a relatively young widow, 51, with no kids and essentially no extended family. I also work for myself and pay my own insurance. After squeaking through the Supreme Court, the ACA provides some comfort that's the Affordable Care Act, if my income were to plummet. But I still worry about raising health care sans a single-payer system. My husband died of cancer, and I was the monetary provider and caregiver, but what would my options be? I want to stay in Charlotte.
Well, I think part of that answer is what state legislature decides to do with respect to the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, ours legislature had decided not to take those federal funds and to expand it. Certainly, though, depending on where her income would be, that certainly could be an option for her. Hopefully, with these Supreme Court decisions, hopefully these legal challenges are over legislators can start focusing on implementing and strengthening the law to make it more widely available.
As opposed to weakening it, which is what they want to do.
Yeah, weakening it, exactly. I mean, that the fact that here we have, what is it, roughly a million people who could benefit from the expansion, who are 50 plus, who don't have that option right now.
Well, here's a question from a healthy 56-year-old, someone who describes themselves as that, would love to hear the topic of the affordable care or affordable health insurance for self-employed baby boomers addressed. Have you or any of your guests tried to buy health insurance on the Affordable Care Act exchange lately? What are your thoughts on that? I'm not sure whether they're indicating that it's difficult to do so or not.
I'm too old to do that, so I have Medicare. I haven't attempted to buy that.
Well, I am self-employed, and I, for years, I was paying huge premiums for my insurance to the tune of something like $11,000 a year in just in healthcare premiums as a self-employed person. Under the Affordable Care Act, there are these amazing subsidies that you can get, and that the rates, the premiums themselves are a lot lower, and then you also can qualify, depending on your income, qualify for tax subsidies. And so it can really lower it to much, much more affordable.
You mentioned early in the conversation that Portland got involved in becoming age-friendly because they were, the first city that was part of the World Health Organization effort to talk about what it would be to be an age-friendly
first
city.
First in the United States.
Yeah. What has it meant for Portland, your participation in that, and your development of the things that need to happen to make it age-friendly?
What is it meant for Portland? Well, we're still on the verge. We have this action plan, but we're at the verge now of getting some city and county funding for this. I mean, up to now, it's been primarily a volunteer effort. Once we get city and county funding, we're going to be able to expand our services.
This is pretty amazing. The Age Friendly Portland Initiative got underway not too long ago, 2006, with an action plan passed unanimously by the Portland City Council in 2013. And in 2014, the county commissioners of the principal county in Portland, you're like Charlotte with several counties around, passed a plan specifying the 10 areas that you talked about earlier being developed: housing, transportation, outdoor spaces and buildings, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and volunteering, employment and the economy. This is a lot of stuff. Social participation, communication and information, community services, and finally, health services. Explain to me, as somebody who follows the shenanigans with the Charlotte City Council and the County Commission here, how you got the City Council to unanimously do this, and how the County Commission got involved in this as well, and are pushing this forward.
I don't know the inside politics of it. I'm a member of a subcommittee, so I wasn't part of the political background to this, nor am I a member of the advisory council, which is the council that really drives the administration through Portland State University of the age-friendly movement. But what was done was a lot of behind-the-scenes lobbying to get champions on the city council and county commission to understand what we're doing. Also, we started in advance to hold certain events, community outreach, education programs, so that the city and county commissioners knew we were serious about this, and we started to see some results. People started to get more involved. So they're seeing that this is a wave that's happening. It's very typically Portland. The difference between a Portland and a Charlotte, as I can see it, and I may be – this is just personal experience – Charlotte, I believe, is a top-down driven city. If you want to get something done, you kind of have to find the powers that be, approach the city government, maybe approach a big corporation. Portland is a bottom-up driven city. A lot of things start with grassroots efforts. A couple of people get together, do something really creative. It starts to catch on, word of mouth. More people get involved, then they approach the city council or the county commission because they have already demonstrated that something is going on that needs to be addressed. The other thing that's very much a part of Portland's makeup, genetic makeup, is innovation is just in the city's blood. We do things ahead of time. We set trends. We don't follow them. When we see a need, we really try and address it as soon as possible. So in the 1970s, we created an urban growth boundary beyond which we do not grow unless we vote on it. We make changes to it. So we are within – the center of downtown is within maybe 20 minutes to a half hour of farmlands. So we have farmers markets, very healthy farmers markets. So we regulate our growth. We have this amazing climate action plan in place. So we anticipate, and I think that's the key, anticipating.
So Portland was the first city in America to be part of this World Health Organization age-friendly city thing, and AARP has partnered with the World Health Organization on an initiative called the Network of Age-Friendly Communities. I was going to ask you where Charlotte stands in that, but I then read, Michael, that 54 U.S. cities are part of this, but none of them are in North Carolina. Why?
Not yet. Not yet. And I think that's just because those 54 cities that are signed up, most of them, this is coming through AARP. So it's really the staff and volunteers in those states who are working with the stakeholders and powers that be in those cities to move that forward. Since I think it was 2006 was it when it started, and then AARP came on board in partnership with the WHO in 2010, things have been moving forward, and that's how the network has been built. Here in Charlotte, the mayor's expressed interest in it. We're in a really good position to jump off on it because of the fact that for the last 2 years we've had the development of the Mecklenburg County Livable Communities Plan,
mm-hmm.
Which has been composed of a number of working groups involving some 150 or 200 individuals and stakeholders. AARP was part of that. To develop this plan. So we've already got these working groups already in place. And the infrastructure, so to speak, in terms of that social capital to take this next step and do the work of, that would be involved with being a network city is there.
When Jeanette was here working for her aging parents, she found that a lot of services that we had were siloed, disconnected, and unknown to potential users. Linda, has that changed very quickly because we're almost out of time?
Unknown, I think, until you need it is sort of something that we've agreed upon in the last 45 minutes or so. But I don't know that I would call them siloed. I think that in North Carolina, as well, a lot of these are federal services, and they sort of have a continuum of care.
Let me stop you there. Linda Miller with the Central Atlanta Area Agency on Aging, Bill McCoy, retired director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, Michael Olander with the AARP of North Carolina, and Jeanette Liardi with Age Friendly Portland.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.